Now, here at Sunday Extra, we hope to offer the occasional moment of insight. We're not just here to entertain, you know. So with this educational role in mind, we're introducing a new segment this morning. We call it Self-Improvement Sunday. Think of us as a mechanics institute of the air. Now, each week around this time, you'll hear an issue or question explained by a person who knows their stuff. How do they make cranes taller on construction sites? Why is Proust so Prousty? Will dreams ever be decodable? You get the drift. This week, why don't Christians have to get circumcised? Now, a German court ruled on Tuesday that parents may not circumcise their sons at birth for religious reasons because the procedure violates the child's right to bodily integrity. Now, both Muslims and Jews circumcise their male children. So why is Christianity the only Abrahamic religion that doesn't encourage circumcision? Joining me to help answer this question is Scott Stevens, editor of the Religion and Ethics site on ABC Online. Scott, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Yeah, thank you, Jonathan.
And thank you for accepting this challenge.
Well, yes.
Now, let's talk, to begin, I think, briefly on the history of circumcision, shall we?
Look, circumcision as a practice in the ancient Near East is actually very, really quite interesting. I mean, the philosopher Hegel back in the 19th century noted, and very few people have actually picked this up, that there was a strange practice in many ancient Near Eastern civilizations and cultures, for instance, Egypt, among the Persians, among the Assyrians, and of course, later on among the Israelites and others, of this fascination with the erect penis as a potent national and even in some ways theological and cultural symbol. So Hegel even noticed, for instance, that during certain times of the year, Egyptians would parade 2 or 3 meter casts or, you know, statues of phalluses during certain festivals, particularly fertility seasons and that sort of thing. And interestingly enough, the whole practice of circumcision doesn't begin with the Abrahamic religions, but in fact, it was a kind of practice as a that was used as a symbol for male virility. In other words, recognizing that we're, you know, in a family-friendly time slot here, the whole idea was that even when the male was not potent, he was still potent. In other words, he always was the most endowed member of the region. So national circumcision, the idea of it, is the symbolism of an entire race of uber potent males. And this, of course, has kind of theological implications as well. So for instance, okay, there are regions, geographies, topographies that are identified with certain deities, and the desert is the one that's usually identified with the Abrahamic god. But see, the desert is also a very masculine region. You know, only the men's men can survive in the wilderness. And so you find, for instance, in the Exodus story, the god that appears to Moses, where is he? He's in the desert. And what does he arm Moses with in his great confrontation with Pharaoh? Well, he arms him with a great big staff. And then Moses is then thrust into Egypt to confront Pharaoh and his magicians, who are also equipped with smaller staves. And the Moses wins in his great confrontation by his great big staff, representing the potency of the Hebrew God, devouring the staffs of the Egyptians.
So, as you know, Quentin Tarantino would subsequently say, apropos of Top Gun, sword fight.
That's exactly right. So the whole idea initially for Egyptians, for Hebrews and others, was that circumcision is the identification of a group of males after their god, in a manner after their god, as being a sort of hyper-masculine, uber-potent.
Gosh. Okay. So that takes us to what sort of point in history have we arrived now?
Well, see, that's primarily the second millennium, and what you still find here is that national deities tended to be associated with a particular gender. So the Hebrew god is generally speaking, a male figure. As you get closer and closer to sort of late antiquity, closer and closer to sort of late before the Common Era, immediately into the Common Era, you find that rationalizations there was a bit of because Hebrew culture, which was the only at this stage the only nationally circumcised culture.
Hmm.
The more that they came in confrontation with Greco-Roman culture, there was a bit of embarrassment here. So there were jibes, for instance, about the Hebrews being emasculated, but the doctor slipped and didn't take off the whole thing. And so there were these different tracts, there were these apologies and explanations that tried to make circumcision a bit more of a cultured, more of a philosophically credible thing. So, for instance, Philo said that ultimately, circumcision is not just for aesthetic reasons in order to transform the member into a thing of beauty, if that sort of thing does it for you, but also for the sake of fertility. In other words, those who are circumcised are more fertile than those who are not. And as you keep going, you find in both Islamic cultures and also in Jewish cultures that various medical and increasingly aesthetic reasons are being used for why circumcision continues to be adopted. Although fundamentally, for both Muslim and Jewish cultures, the fundamental thing is circumcision was given to our father Abraham as a sign of his special relationship with them. And so today the theological reason given remains this identification with our patriarch.
And so Christianity dips out because?
Yeah, see, this is very interesting. For the first few decades of the Christian church, most church members continue to be Jewish. And so the idea of circumcision as a rite of initiation, in other words, as you come into church, no, you don't go through catechesis. No, you don't sit in, what does it mean to be a Baptist classes. Nope, you submit yourself to the man with the big knife. The idea being that Christianity remained a kind of Jewish sect.
Mm.
But as Christianity became an increasingly, not simply a universal religion, but something that was incorporating more and more Greeks, Romans, barbarians, and others, after about 4 or 5 decades, this really precipitated a very real fight within early Christianity about its relationship to Judaism. And so you find ultimately someone like the Apostle Paul saying that if one believes in Christ, circumcision avails them nothing. And so the rejection of circumcision as an initiation practice, as a mark of identification, that was rejected very early on, precisely because Christianity was regarded not just as a kind of ethnic, a cultural practice, but rather as a religion for all nations.
The lack of circumcision is almost becoming there a mark of differentiation.
Yes, and in fact, for many Christians, circumcision remained problematic because it created a sort of hierarchy within the church itself. Those who were circumcised were the real deal. Those who weren't were not. And so rejecting circumcision early on was a rather natural thing for the church to do because of its egalitarian impulse. The problem, believe it or not, Jonathan, later on became what to think not about those who were circumcised. Sorry, not to how to think about those who were not circumcised, but rather how to think about those who were. And so that's been part of the church's ongoing struggle, if you like, with some early anti-Semitism.
What's the view of the modern churches?
This is very, very strange because for many denominations, the whole topic is strange. But for most Christian movements, it is simply a non-issue. You do find, however, within certain places in the United States, these are sort of movements that, unfortunately, my family was heavily involved in. There is this desire to recover aspects and elements of ancient Jewish law. The idea being God gave them to the Hebrews for a particular reason. The church has abandoned it for, you know, to its own detriment. Therefore, it's important to recover these things for hygiene, for dietary reasons, for whatever else. And so among some places in the United States, you still find a practice of many Christians having their male sons circumcised in the first 2 weeks of their lives. But look, for most people, for most Christian movements, this really wouldn't be much of an issue.
Scott, thank you. We now know, thanks to this our first self-improvement Sunday segment, why it is that Christians don't have to get circumcised. Our thanks go to Scott Stevens, editor of the Religion and Ethics site on ABC Online. Scott, much obliged. Sunday Extra, with you until 10 this morning.